This edition of the week is sponsored by Invitrogen. Gibco Cell Culture products now feature easy-to-read, color-coded, and writable labels that are easy to find. Take a closer look at www.invitrogen.com/labels. Welcome to The Week, the weekly news podcast from The Scientist. This week, senior editor Brendan Marr talks with Kenneth Chen, director of the Massachusetts General Hospital Cardiovascular Research Center and professor at Harvard Medical School and the Harvard Stem Cell Institute. As Chen writes in the August issue of The Scientist, results from the first round of controlled human stem cell trials for heart disease are in, and they provide a chance to evaluate the approach. Here, the noted researcher provides his assessment.
What drew you to write about this topic for us? Well, my own view is that stem cell biology in general, and cardiovascular stem cell biology in particular, is one of the most exciting areas in the biological sciences right now. It has clearly captivated the imagination of the public, as well as consternation of various social and political action groups, if you will. So it's certainly in the eye of the needle. So it's an important topic to address. The other point is that cardiovascular disease is a very important problem, and I think the promise and potential for stem cell therapy in our field is enormous over the long term. That being said, with all of the recent incoming data from larger scale controlled clinical trials, it seemed that this would be an opportune moment to reflect on the lessons learned from these studies, but to also view them from a scientific perspective, not necessarily at this stage. I guess anyone would consider that the likelihood of unequivocally demonstrating clinical utility in a large population for a highly prevalent disease using any type of cell-based therapy would be something that would be very difficult proposition from the initial outset. So it's not surprising that some of the studies that have come in have not necessarily been all unambiguous. So I think this represents an opportune time, sort of a, if you will, intermezzo, to reflect on what's happened in this first act, if you will, and then to make some projections on what might happen in the second act.
So kind of jumping to that then, what has really come out of this first round of controlled studies? What are your impressions?
Well, my own impressions are that the main message here is that one, the current approaches that are being taken essentially are showing that it may be difficult to extrapolate from studies in small animal models to the clinical setting. I think that's one of the first things that that is being pointed out, and then this underscores the importance of developing alternative model systems and approaches that would have fidelity to the clinical setting. Of course, there's no way to know this unequivocally unless one takes precepts that have been found in smaller animals and then moves them forward into a clinical setting. So that's the first point. The second is that I think that this is a much more complex issue than initially anticipated. That on the basis of some of the earlier studies, it looked as if it was going to be fairly robust and fairly straightforward. Certainly the clinical studies were initiated were essentially posing that prospect. But now it's becoming increasingly apparent that this is going to be much more challenging than we initially had anticipated. The other is that there is a need for controlled trials. There is clearly, with modern medical therapy, evidence of a degree of spontaneous recovery, so that even at the 6-month point, well, there could be a difference between treated and untreated groups, that difference becomes less evident over the longer term, and that there can be a sustained recovery in global function after acute myocardial infarction with modern medical therapy, which essentially underscores the point that controlled trials are going to be needed to really interpret the long-term benefit of any of these approaches.
So do you think any of these studies were designed or controlled particularly well and showed more or less promise than others?
I would say that to date, what would appear to me, and then again, I am we're getting into the realm of opinion rather than the realm of fact. But if we look at the data overall, I think one would have to be led to the conclusion that if this were a drug for that was targeted at affecting the remodeling of the heart after an infarct, in other words, leading to sustained improvement in cardiac function, then it probably would not be continued, and not to safety concerns, just to lack of efficacy. Of course, that being said, there are a variety of approaches that could be tried that would be alternative to those currently employed. And it would seem to me, rather than continuing along the same path, in other words, using intracoronary delivery of crude bone marrow precursors, that the time has come to, first of all, focus on the mechanism by which any cell-based therapy might have an effect. So that would be one of the first issues. In other words, what mechanistically are we trying to achieve? Are we trying to promote the healing, wound repair, scar formation, some sort of secondary effect on the heart after it's injured? Are we trying to improve vascularization of the heart? Are we trying to promote the survival of the existing myocardial cell? Are we trying to stimulate the replication and regeneration of existing already differentiated cells? Or are we trying to mobilize a very rare precursor component that has sort of escaped detection but somehow can be mobilized in this setting, albeit probably not to sufficient levels to allow a significant amount of regeneration in the heart? Or are we trying to promote the intrinsic contractility and function of the heart after an insult? All of these are distinct mechanisms that would have distinct pathways that would drive these endpoints, and there's likely to be a variety of different cell types that would be optimal depending upon the outcome that is the most compelling in terms of changing the clinical endpoint. So identifying the mechanistic basis, I still believe, is a very important point. Secondly, with that then, of course, gets to the point of optimizing the cell type to match the endpoint that's needed. So, for example, if it is indeed angiogenesis, and there's a recent paper in JCI that suggests angiogenesis is an important paraffin pathway by which cell-based therapy can augment cardiac function, at least in the short term, in a small animal model. If that be the case, then the question is, what are the best cell types for delivering those paraffin stimuli to drive vasculogenesis? If the desired endpoint is to enhance the amount of viable cardiac muscle, then obviously attention needs to be paid on what are the optimal cell types that are authentic cardiac progenitors that could display triggered directed differentiation into the end cell type of interest. And here then, one of the issues, of course, is obtaining a sufficient number of cells to drive the endpoint. That's going to be one of the challenges if heart failure is the main topic of interest therapeutically.
What would you say are some of the opportunities in cardiovascular health that make this a different or a different kind of field, a different application for stem cell biology?
Let me take that question, because I think it's actually a very important question. It really gets down to what are particular areas that are going to represent challenges and opportunities, strengths and disadvantages, if you will, of working in the cardiovascular space. So I'd like to take that sort of on both sides. In terms of the difficulties, some of them are obvious, and some of them have become more more clear. And then I've sort of extrapolated on those earlier. One of the first points is the size of the clinical problem due to the prevalence and the overall significance of this as a financial burden on a already aging population. This is a disease area that is highly prevalent. It's not a rare orphan disease, if you will. And that means that whatever therapy is developed, there will have to be scalability for a large number of people, which is a very important point, because scalability is one of the major issues, of course, in biotechnology. If you have an antibody, it can work. The question is can you make it sufficient quantities that the number of people who would need it would get access to it? The other issue regarding scalability is just for an individual patient to regenerate an entire heart, particularly in stages of advanced heart failure, end-stage heart failure, or stable advanced heart failure as opposed to acute myocardial infarction is quite challenging. The technology for generating sufficient number of cells is an issue even in the studies that have been done to date. So those are areas that are going to continue to be challenging. The other area that has sort of also I think represented an issue is that there are a number of technologies that can be used in heart failure. And as I alluded to earlier, there's already evidence that some of these can lead, at least modern medical therapy, can lead to a certain modicum of recovery of function. There are also other, what I would call, halfway technologies, such as left ventricular assist devices, that also can come into play. And so as a result, advanced heart failure is not necessarily conventionally, at least from regulatory bodies, viewed in the same light as cancer. It's not necessarily, or metastatic cancer, it's not necessarily a terminal diagnosis, although the long-term survival, at least from my view, suggests that it is a chronic disease that can lead to a terminal outcome in most cases. But as a result of this, the clinical trials have placed an emphasis on survival outcomes, and it's been difficult to get approval for any approaches in heart failure without with surrogate endpoints. And so this means that there are going to have to be very large clinical trials to prove the clinical utility of any of these approaches. And so that's going to represent a barrier, if you will, for clinical approval. So those are some of the challenges that exist. The other thing that I think represents a challenge is that, to at least from my view, to achieve the goal of cardiac regeneration, you're going to need a team that encompasses people from very different spectrums of the biomedical sphere. I would say people that are all on the end of interventional and clinical heart failure, heart transplantation, clinical trialists, all the way to people that are doing fundamental work in cardiac developmental biology and stem cell biology. And so that disparity obviously also represents a challenge in building a team that really is interdisciplinary and translational. Without a clear paradigm to translate yet, the team will have to work together to develop the paradigm to translate. Now, at the same time, I think there are going to be opportunities here as well. There's a lot of new information on resident stem cells from human cardiac tissue, there's a lot of work that's being done on identifying approaches to renew the cells, expand them, maintain their multipotentiality, and in some cases it's been shown that these cells are actually perform these functions in vivo during development. And in some cases, they can be coaxed to differentiate under the right conditions in the adult heart in certain circumstances. Also, the ES cell-related technology is moving ahead quickly, and cardiac cell lineages have been one of the first to easily be identified from differentiating ES cell systems. And as advances continue in this area, I believe it'll be possible to clone individual purified single-cell derived clones of cardiac progenitors, which would be something that hasn't even been achieved in the context of blood or hematopoietic stem cells, which are difficult to propagate ex vivo. So I think this is going to represent a major advance. The other point is as I was making earlier, the challenge of building this interdisciplinary team all the way from very high-end clinical work to cutting-edge frontier science work in stem cell biology also represents an opportunity. Device and imaging technology is quite advanced in the cardiac sector, and it's likely that the new developments for imaging cardiac stem cell-derived progeny in vivo and also their directed delivery to specific areas in the heart are likely to emanate from variations in existing cardiovascular technology. And of course, as you know, some of the major players in device technology are cardiovascular-focused. And this is where I think the scalability and the prevalence of the disease may very well drive this interest as being one of the areas that they target. So if one, I think it's a given that all cell-based therapy is in a high-risk proposition right now. But of course, the advantage of cardiovascular is not only you have the high risk, you have the high reward given the prevalence. The other area I think of interest is it's becoming clear that some of the cardiac progenitors that are being isolated can enter unique specialized cell types, including relatives of the coronary arterial tree, and also endothelial lineages, as well as pacemaker cell lineages. And so I think the opportunity is going to come in the future, not too distant future, to start considering whether or not the first target should actually be regeneration of the whole heart or regenerating specific components of the heart through directed differentiation of already more specialized and committed cardiac progenitors derived from either a postnatal source or from an embryonic stem cell source.
Is that going to require a big sea change in the kind of clinical endpoints people are looking at?
Well, certainly, because some of those, the endpoints would be, so if the endpoint's vasculogenesis, then perhaps the ideal cell type to start forward with is a cell that is already known to directly contribute to the coronary arterial tree. One of the things that has been overlooked is that the coronary arteries actually have a very distinct developmental paradigm for their formation. The proepicardial organ, which is a transient structure, actually gives rise to most of the coronary arterial tree. And so there's a very distinct set of signals and pathways that lead to its formation. Of course, structurally, it's quite different because it's much more muscular than some of the other vessels. So it's highly likely that just triggering angiogenesis, in other words, small vessel disease, without a substantial amount of smooth muscle may not be sufficient to ensure lasting coronary collateralization. And so one might envision that it would be pivotal to have the right cell as well as the right molecular cues to drive that cell present in the same delivery system for cell-based therapy to trigger coronary collateralization via cell-based therapeutic approach. So that's an example where the outcome will be a lot easier to score because there you're looking at perfusion, and there are a lot of quantitative endpoints for that, as opposed to documenting unequivocal cardiac muscle regeneration in vivo is in humans will be a difficult task. The technology isn't there yet. I'm sure it will be developed over time, though. And there's quite a few encouraging approaches on PET-based systems that I think with reporters and other ingenious approaches with MRI that are going to be valuable here.
So it's obvious that these things are moving very quickly. What do you think brought us to this point in such a short period of time into clinical trials?
Well, I think one of the issues here is that there's a large unmet clinical need, and it's a huge medical problem. There were robust preclinical results in small animals, which were extremely encouraging and suggested that this would be almost a slam dunk, if you will. It's an exciting new area of long-term promise, and of course that's been very clear just from looking at the recent discussions. all over the world, a number of new stem cell initiatives that states are proposing, countries are proposing, international level collaborations. There's a lot of excitement in this area that helped propel it. There was a clear clinical path that could be executed in academia without large capital investment, and without the involvement of other companies. Bone marrow, doing a bone marrow removal, and procuring the cells, injecting them into coronary. These are things which cardiologists can do, and obviously can be executed in an academic setting, which is what has been the underpinning for most of these studies. And as a corollary, that it's a new area, it's an exciting area, and it's also an evolving area in terms of regulatory oversight. Regulatory oversight for this type of work, which is sort of autologous transfer tissue, is still evolving. It's not an external product or a foreign product that's introduced into the patient. It's moving one part of the patient's tissue into another compartment. Now, of course, it's becoming increasingly clear that this sort of thing is going to also need some degree of regulatory oversight, but I think that led to the field taking off quite quickly. I think it's been shown, at least with the current approaches, that the safety issue is not a concern with current approaches, but of course, as one changes the cell type, changes the delivery, changes the patient subset that's being examined, each one of these then carries with it its own set of issues that probably need to be addressed appropriately in preclinical models, at least in my view.
Well, I want to thank you for taking some time to talk with us.
For more on Kenneth Chen's views on cardiac stem cell research, see the August issue of The Scientist. Join us online at www.the-scientist.com for more of The Scientist Daily News, blogs on current events, controversies and conferences, and features from our August print edition. This edition of The Week was brought to you by Invitrogen. Gibco cell culture products now feature easy-to-read, color-coded, and writable labels that are easy to find. Take a closer look at www.invitrogen.com/labels.